This is an oral history interview for the RSCDS Oral History Project with Tom Kerr on the 20th of February 2015. So, Tom, would you mind just telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got into Scottish country dancing?
When I went to school in 1935, one of the things we had to do was to dance. And one of the teachers there was very keen on Scottish country dancing, and that's what we did. So that was my start in Scottish country dancing. And I must admit, I enjoyed it, and it's something I've kept on doing ever since. And that was at primary school in Portobello. To give the school its proper name, Portobello Higher Grade School. From there I went to Leith Academy, where there wasn't so much interest in the dancing, although we did some, but not a great deal. Thereafter, when I left school to start an engineering apprenticeship in 1946, it did curtail my dancing quite appreciably because I was going to night school as well, studying three nights a week. And so I didn't do very much dancing, but I did keep in touch. And basically, the dancing I did was with a little group at the Harriet Watt College. And this continued because I carried on studying, and eventually I got a degree after about 10 years. Doing it all at night. And from working on the tools as an apprentice, I then became a draftsman. And so my studies were of great help in that respect. Then in 1956, won a place as a draftsman in Iran, working in the oil fields. And this is where oil was first discovered in commercial quantities in 1908 at a place called Majid-i Suleiman, and that's where I was based. I spent 7 years there. But luckily, when I arrived, I found there was a gentleman by the name of Stuart McNaughton who was running a group of Scottish country dancing, which I joined. But about 2 or 3 months later, Stuart, who was quite elderly, said he was retiring, and he said, Tom...
Sorry to interrupt you just for 1 second. Please continue. You said,
Yes. After 2 or 3 months, Stuart said he was retiring. And I still remember his words, Tom, you take over. Now, this was a bit of a shock because I'd never taught anybody dancing in my life before. However, I rose to the challenge and I carried on doing so. And for the next 7 years, I ran this a dancing class in Iran, in the oil fields. And we had a very enthusiastic group, different nationalities, anything from Canadians, Americans, Norwegians, Danes, Dutch, French, German, Australian, New Zealand, plus some Englishmen as well, or English people, I should say, as well as Scots. So it was quite a mixed group, as well as the Iranians, of course, as well. And this went successfully. And then after 7 years, when I decided it was time, I got married to a lass who I met in Iran. And in the 7 years, we had two children, and it was time for them to be going to school. So I thought the best thing to do is to pack up from Iran and take them back to the UK, which is what we did. And unfortunately, when it came to the bit, because the class was still very keen to carry on, and there was a lass who was keen to take over the class, and she'd been one of my star pupils for quite a number of years, and that was a quandary because all the records, and they were all LPs, and the dance books were my property. And I thought, well, if I take them with me, that'll be the end of class. So I left the lot. And then I heard, sadly, that about 6 months later, the class had folded. So that was the end of the dancing in the oil fields in Iran.
And sorry to interrupt, was that class affiliated to the society?
No, it was not. Yes. It was just a small group, so we never even thought about affiliation at that time. And then I left, my wife and I and family left, and then we had this house in Tunbridge. And I joined a group there. But then my next assignment was in Denmark, building a refinery at Fredericia. And so I started a small class there, which we held in the hotel. And this lasted for 2 years, and nobody was keen to take her on again, so it really folded when I left. Then I carried on dancing in Tunbridge, and of course the children were that's putting it badly. The children, of course, were the main attraction there. The children were the main responsibility, and we had to look after them. So the dancing was a bit curtailed, but we did manage to keep on dancing. And then 1973, I was assigned to a job in Basra, in Iraq. And the first thing I did there was to start a group of dancing, group of dancers, and very enthusiastic. But again, this lasted for 4 years, and then nobody else was keen to take it on, so I'm afraid that folded when I left, because the job came to an end. That was the end of that. And then I spent a lot of time working in the North Sea on offshore platforms. I'm an engineer, by the way, a mechanical engineer. So that's where my duties were taking me. And so again, I didn't do much dancing. But one thing I did in 1979, I was working on the Magnus platform for British Petroleum. And I devised a dance, which I called Magnus of the Dark North Sea. And it was a demonstration dance for 8 couples, in other words, 16 dancers, in 4 different parts. And this followed the pattern of building a platform in the sea. 4 groups of 4 onshore representing the building of the modules. And then a long line, one after the other, all danced round and eventually came to a group in the middle of the hall. And that was on the platform. And each of these modules came together to form what's called the topsides on the platform. And then, of course, they had to be linked up, all the electrics and instrumentation and pipework, things like that. And so there were a number of different figures which represented the interconnection work, which is principally called the hookup. And then at the end, the dancers peel off in a long line and they end up one end on the shore and one end on the platform with this long line of dancers in between, and that represented the pipeline taking the oil back to shore.
And was this the first dance you wrote, or had you been writing dances all along?
I had written dances before, but I've lost them. I don't know what happened to them, yes. So.
And did you always draw inspiration from the places that you were in at the time, or...?
Not really. The Magnus of the Dark North Sea was really the first one in that respect. So, anyway, 1980, there was a job which the company had in Brazil. And it was not doing very well at all. So the operations director asked me, by this time I was running a department in head office in London, and the operations director said, "Tom, go out there and see what's wrong and find out and then see what we can do about it." So I went out, and the problem was the chap who was in charge. He wasn't doing a good job at all. He wasn't up to it. So I sent a report back to headquarters, and then the operations director said, "Well, okay, Tom, we need somebody else there. You stay and run it." Now, I had a department to run back in the head office. But of course, by that time, work was very, very scarce. So if I went back, who knows what might have happened. So I decided I would do. So again, I was staying there, and I was there for 4 years. And again, I didn't have to start a group because the St. Andrew's Society of Rio de Janeiro was going strong. And they had a group of dancers, not very good, but they were enthusiastic. And so I took over the group there and ran that for all the while I was there. And then that came to an end. Where have I been? Iran, Denmark, Basra, that's Iraq, and then Brazil. And then, of course, the company was in dire straits and had been taken over by another company. And this, by the way, was John Brown, a company who built things like the Queen Elizabeth and the Queen Mary and so forth. They were taken over by a fly-by-night organisation called Trafalgar House, which was famous for its creative accounting. And so, having taken it over, and I'm sitting out in Rio de Janeiro, and that was my department, so they appointed somebody else to run my department. And when the job in Rio came to an end, I was going to be out on a limb somewhere, and the offer of a job in Milan came up for another platform in the Mediterranean. So I went there, and again, started a group of dancers, and very sadly, I didn't know that Jim Healy was also living in Milan, and he had a group going already, and I didn't know a thing about it. I did not meet Jim all the time I was in Milan. So there were these two separate groups going. But that's the way of it. So, and again, when I left, that group folded. And then after that, I went to South Africa, Cape Town, again to build another platform. And again, I got there, and the first equal branch of the RSCDS, overseas branch, was Cape Town, which had been started by a lady called Kay Gibson in 1950. And the Cape Town branch and the Boston branch were accepted as branches at a meeting in October in 1950. Although Boston claims to be the first overseas branch, it's not.
Oh, Tom, it's the first. Don't be starting any fights.
Sorry?
Don't be starting any fights.
We nearly had one. But I met the president of the branch at AGM 1 year in Edinburgh. And he was not best pleased when I claimed that Boston was not the first. But anyway, I was quite honest about it. I never claimed that we were first. I said we were first equal. And I joined them. They already had teachers there. And so I just joined them as a teacher and as a dancer. And that went very well. And I'm still a member of the Cape Town branch. And I go back from time to time. In fact, on the 28th of February this year, I shall be going back again.
And when you joined the branch, you said you joined as a teacher and a dancer. So had you gotten your teaching certificate before?
No, I had no chance of taking my certificate at all. I mean, where I was dancing, I was virtually the only person who was in a position to teach at all. And there were no members of the society there. So there was I in Cape Town. And then, sadly, my wife took ill. And there was no knowing what was wrong with her. And it was becoming more and more difficult. I had another contract lined up in Malaysia, which would have taken me nicely up to the age of 65. And then I could have retired with all that overseas experience behind me. But my wife was so ill that I had to, I took early retirement to look after her. And then sadly she died, and that was in 1992. And then after that I thought, well, I'm back in the UK at a loose end. I'll go and have a go at the prelim at summer school. So that was when I first went to summer school in 1992 to do the prelim. And when I got there, didn't know anybody at all. And fortnights intensive dancing, and I had a ball. It was absolutely wonderful. I really enjoyed it. And the group that they were taking the prelim were a very nice bunch of people. And we didn't all pass, but most of us did. And then 2 years later, went back after having continued dancing, of course, all this time. And then 2 years later, I went back in 1994 to take the final certificate. And there were nine of us who were survivors from the prelim class. And as we all knew each other, we just gelled together in a very nice group. And when it came to the bit, we all passed the full certificate. And somehow or other, the news leaked out while we were there. It's not supposed to, because they, in case of anybody has not passed, and some have passed and some haven't, and so it'll be great disappointment. So normally the thing is that you don't hear about it until such time as you've got home and it's the results are sent to you. But we all passed, and so somehow or other the news leaked out. So on the Saturday night, we all took ourselves out to a very nice restaurant and had a very nice dinner. And I still keep in touch with many of them. You probably know Jimmy Hill.
Oh, yeah, I've heard.
Yes, well,
yeah.
Jimmy was in that class as well. There was another Hill as well, Jeremy Hill. But I've lost touch with most of them as well, sadly. Still dancing, and I carried on coming to summer school because I enjoyed it so much. And I've never missed year since 1992. But at the age of 83 in 1994, when I went to summer school, I decided that I was not dancing nearly as well as I had done or would like to do. So I decided that rather than drag the class down, I would call it a day. So that was my swan song.
So, sorry, what year was that?
Last year.
Oh, last year.
Yes.
Sorry.
2014. I went to summer school in July, but my birthday's in August. So I was still technically 83 then.
Okay.
I'm 84 now. So, and every year I went to summer school, either for 1 week or 2 weeks, I always did a turn at the Cayley. And in fact, I've sent an article to the magazine called 30 Cayleys at Summer School. Not that I was there 30 years, but because I was there for 2 weeks on a number of occasions, it all added up to 30 Cayleys. And normally I would give a recitation. and every recitation I did was different. I never repeated myself, and I have a large repertoire of recitations. But last year, I decided, since it was going to be my last summer school, I would do something quite different. I would sing. I don't claim to be a singer, but there was a very nice Irish song called The Kerry Dance. I don't know if you know it, do you?
I think I do. I don't think I could sing it as well as you.
Oh, the days of the Kerry dancing, ah, the ring of the piper's tune, all for one of those hours of gladness, gone, alas, like our youth too soon. That's what I sang, but I changed the words. And instead of the Kerry dance, I call it the Scottish dance. Oh, the days of the Scottish dancing, ah, the ring of the piper's tune, oh, for one of those hours of gladness, gone, alas, like our youth too soon. And I tried, I practiced hard, and when it came to the night, I sang it, and to my utter astonishment, everybody stood up and applauded. I have never been to summer school before where a performer or performers has had a standing ovation. But to my utter astonishment, that's what happened. Possibly because this was the end of me, that I wasn't coming back again. How well I sang it, I don't know, because I'm not a singer, I don't claim. But anyway, I knew all the words and I sang them in the right order. Hopefully, reasonably tunefully. So, but that was my last summer school. I won't be going back this year again because I don't think I can do it justice. But winter school is a different matter. I went to the very first winter school, missed a number of years because I was in South Africa, because I keep going back there regularly, and in some occasions the dates coincided. But I've been going now for the past 6 or 7 years regularly, and I should be going again this year as well. This, in other words, next weekend. The standard is, it's not so demanding, pardon me, as summer school, so I think I shall keep on going there as long as I can dance reasonably. I can't say I'm dancing well, but I'm dancing reasonably. And again, of course, I should be giving a turn at the ceilidh, as I always do. In between whiles, of course, having left Cape Town, I kept my membership going there, and that's still my main branch. But back in the UK, and I decided to move to Gloucestershire, which is where my daughter was living, and so I joined the Cheltenham branch there. And 8 years ago, that would be 2007, I went to the Montpellier Ball in France. And early on, I saw this young lady she had footwork to die for, absolutely wonderful. And later on in the evening, she was standing there by herself, so I asked her for a dance. And we danced, and the dance was Socky Hall. And our steps just fitted perfectly and went down the middle and back up, and we smiled at each other, and we've danced together ever since. We're still dancing now. And we've gone back to the Montpellier Ball every year, and again we shall be there this 2015 as well. Since I was in France, my partner was living in France, we joined the Lyon branch. So I'm effectively a member of three different branches, but main membership in Cape Town, and at Cheltenham I'm a teacher there, and also at Lyon when I turn up there, which is not very often, but I do. Yes. So that's it, I think.
Do you mind if I just ask you a couple
of questions? Of course, certainly.
Just to bring you back to teaching, because obviously you set up a lot of different groups and
yes.
all over the world, and your teachers must have been very good at school and, you know, while you were doing the night classes and everything. Is that where you kind of learned how to teach from, do you think?
I don't know. I picked it up as I went along. I knew what the dances were, and I said, well, this is what you do, and you do that and this and the next thing, and I just carried on doing that. And then, of course, when I went to the prelim, then, of course, it was on a much more formal basis, and I learned a lot, a great deal, about how to teach when I went to summer school, where my previous method was show them and get them to do the same thing, which worked reasonably well. Everybody seemed to enjoy it. I won't say the standard was particularly high, but one of the main things about dancing is having fun. And so I tried to make sure that everybody had fun, whether they were dancing well or not, but tried to make sure that everybody who was present would participate, which again I feel is important rather than having wallflowers. So, any other questions?
And just about dance devising as well, because I know you devise a lot of different dances.
Yes.
So, and you spoke earlier about how you took inspiration from where you were working at the time in the North Sea, and so I just wondered, is it always current places that you take inspiration from, and has that changed over time?
Right, okay, let's go back to Cape Town, because I went back again, and in 1995, of course, I had a good number of friends, not just among the dancers, but elsewhere as well, and one of the dancers was a lass by the name of Christine Dawson. And such was the situation that we got married in 1995, and that's when I devised Cape Town Wedding, which is a very popular dance, and of course I submitted it to the society, and it was published in Book 39, and it's now caught on and everybody dances it all over the world, which is very gratifying, and it's also the first dance in the book. And I have permission from the society, because they have the copyright, I have their permission to include it in the book. So, and there's the wording is there.
And this is your new book that you're talking about,
and
Tom's
that's it,
book
yes.
of dances.
Yes. So you'll find the very first dance there is Cape Town Wedding. And the dance, as it says there, the dance follows the pattern of things, because it shows the first couple crossing down without giving hands, because they don't know each other then. And then they're turning the third couple on their respective opposite sides, and this represents meeting other people. And then they come together in the middle, and that represents their first meeting. Now, they don't know each other very well, so they lead up, which is right hand and right, up to the top, and then they get to know each other better. So they take two hands in promenade hold, and do a reel of three with the second couple. And then they all petronella in tandem and all join hands in a ring. That's the first, second and third couples. And that represents the ring, the circle. And everybody casts back to original places. And the dance finishes with the knot. And that represents the wedding.
That sounds lovely.
But sadly, the wedding, the marriage itself did not last. So I think it was 2001 we were divorced, and I thought I'd write a dance for the occasion and call it The Parting of the Ways, but the young lady did not like that title at all, so instead I called it Fare Thee Well, And since Cape Town, I put Cape Town Wedding as the first dance in the book, Fairly Well is the last dance. And again, it is quite symbolic because it starts off with an all-round pirouette. The first couple, they are very much in love. Then they dance down the middle and back up again and cross over to the opposite side. That's when things start falling apart. And then they're dancing with other people, with Rue Le Free on the opposite side. And then the hello and goodbye setting, so occasional meetings, then finish up in second place on their own sides. Now that's the first 32 bars. Now that took about half an hour. The last 8 bars took 4 years. I could not find a good ending. So I devised a completely new figure. And since the knot represents the wedding, I call this one Untie the Knot. And it's a completely different figure which I created, and that's the last 8 bars of Fare Thee Well. And it's a rather nice figure, I like it, and everybody who's danced it seemed to like it as well. And I submitted it to the RSCDS, but somehow or other they did not like it, or they didn't accept it anyway. So that was that.
And does that happen a lot when you're devising dances? Do you, you know, devise half of it and then come back to it when you...
Sometimes, yes. Some I just devise straight off, depending on circumstances. One of the dances there, my young lady in France, her name is Jane Murray, by the way. Jane and I went on holiday to Orkney. And we met Scottish country dancers there. And one of the gentlemen, Mike Cowdrey by name, suggested when he found that I had been devising dances and had done Cape Town Wedding, why don't I devise a dance for this visit to Orkney? So I did. And it's in the book there, and it's called A Visit to Orkney. And it represents the travelling there, and then using the rondel to represent going into some of the archaeological sites, which one accesses through a very low doorway. And with the rondel, of course, you're dancing under arches and things like that. And then turning each other, other couples, representing meeting everybody else there. And I've forgotten what the ending is. Yes, so... Yeah, I try and have meaning for the dances.
Yeah.
So, and my mind is full of cotton wool at the moment. I need some inspiration.
And do you have a favourite dance, either of your own devising or of anybody else?
I have a dance in here. Oh yes, I'll come back to that in a moment.
Oh.
Another one I've just devised quite recently, in fact last year, is that one there. Farewell to St Kilda. Do you know about St Kilda? St Kilda is a group of islands out with the Outer Hebrides. It's a very strange place. It's been inhabited for thousands of years. And it's just a small group of islands, and there's only one really which is habitable. And even then it's very small. And that's called Hirta. But St Kilda, the islands there, they have the highest cliffs in Europe. And the seabird population is enormous. They have sheep on the islands, and they are becoming a unique breed. But sadly, the economy was based on feathers. And the economy in the 1920s collapsed. And it was such that the inhabitants, a lot had emigrated back to the mainland, and they decided that such was the state of the economy, and they were actually starving, that they packed up and left. And that's why I wrote farewell to St Kilda. That was in 1930 that they left. And I'm going on a cruise in May this year to St Kilda, a place I've always wanted to get to.
Yeah.
So that's why I wrote this dance. And again, it's symbolic. And the first 16 bars represent the inhabitants doing their daily business, going about their work. And then the first 20 bars, I should say. And then the next four bars, first 24 bars, they're all working. Then the next eight bars, they're all saying farewell to each other. And then the last eight bars represent leaving the island, where they're doing, all four couples are dancing a promenade. Yes. And then what else? Let's see. Corrie Jukett. Most of the Kerrs are in years gone by, were left-handed. And a duke in Broad Scots is a fist or a hand. And Corrie is a corruption of Kerr. So Corrie Jukett means left-handed. And one of the figures I've devised is called a left-hand switch. Another one I devised was a meeting at Montpellier. That was where I met Jane Murray. But I think my favourite dance is that one there, Lion Kop Strathspey. Now you've heard of Table Mountain, I presume, in Cape Town. Well, Lion Kop is another mountain there. And again, it has a figure which I've devised called an Allemande spray, which I hope people will like. And then Montpellier Gardens, that's Montpellier Gardens in Cheltenham. And this, as I said here, Montpellier Gardens in Cheltenham are where the ladies and gentlemen of the town would take the air in Victorian and Edwardian times on Sunday afternoons. Therefore, the dance is seen as being danced in a very elegant and stately manner. That was devised in 2007. Another dance I devised, Royal Tunbridge Wells. That was for the 25th, because I was dancing with that group then. This was in 2001, they had their 25th anniversary and they wanted to publish a book of dances. So I submitted this one, which I called Royal Tunbridge Wells, which is the name of the band. And there I devised another figure, which is called Crossing Allemands, which is there. It has no special significance. It's just that they dance, which I rather like. Another one, which I don't think anybody will really take to symmetry. It's completely symmetrical. Whatever you're doing, your partner's doing exactly the same on the opposite side, or the other side. And the other side could be your own side.
Oh, so that one's a challenge.
And there's that in the visit to Orkney. What else is there? And I said, and there are diagrams here for all the figures I've devised. The Allemande spray, crossing Allemandes, the full switch, left-hand switch, right-hand switch, roundabout, untie the knot, and La Crosse, which is I've stolen from the field sports game. Usually played by ladies, but it's a North American, not, it's a Canadian a sport field game, two teams. But I've got my dancers crossing. Oh yes, E-I-E-I-O. That stands for Elaine and Ian, twice. And the O is the ring. They're getting married this year in April. Very good friends of mine. Very good dancers too. The others have significance for me, but I don't think there's anything special about them otherwise.
So, do you find, since you retired and everything, that your devising dances has increased a lot? Or?
No, just when the fit takes me. One of them I devised, and I can't remember which one it was, at summer school, and I was not sleeping well that night, so about 3 o'clock in the morning, I devised this dance in my head. I can't remember which one it is. Oh, yes. Another one I've called the Inquisitress. I was having a phone call with Jane, and she was asking question after question after question. And I thought that was a good title for a dance. The Inquisitress. Now, another one there, Canadian Ladies. This was inspired by a group of Canadian ladies who were at summer school in the teacher's class, and we were talking about devising dances, and one of them said, well, why don't you devise a dance and call it Canadian Ladies? So I did. So, and then it is there. And of course, Cheltenham is famous for its races, and so that dance there, I see it being danced in a very vigorous manner, sprinting around.
If I could just bring you back as well to
the
question or the issue of branches, because you've obviously been a member of and are a member of a lot of different branches.
Yes.
And so do you think the way branches, the way people join branches and the way branches are run has changed a lot over the years? Or
never thought about that.
Okay.
I mean, I joined branches as a matter of convenience because I was there and there was a group dancing, or I formed a dance or a group or whatever. What I do is when I'm talking about dancing to others who are non-dancers, I try and encourage them to come and join. Either the group that's, if I happen to be somewhere else, and I know there's a group of dancers there, I suggest that you might like to go and join them. So, I think I'm a good ambassador for the society. But has it changed? I don't know. I never even thought about it. So, anything else?
I don't think so. I think because you were pretty comprehensive and you gave a really good timeline of things. Was there anything else that you wanted to...
Ooh. Yes, one thing very, very sad, and that is that my children have not taken to the dancing. That is a big disappointment.
Oh, there's still time, though, they might.
Well, my son is now talking about retiring. I don't think so, no. Some, it's very unlikely. They have tried. Oh, yes, they've tried, but they never really took to it. So that was a big disappointment. But there you are. Can't have everything. I can't live their lives for them. So
sometimes these things skip a generation as well. So.
My grandchildren do not exhibit any wish to do any dancing either, sadly. And two of them are in Australia at the moment.
Oh.
So. No, I don't think they will be dancers. The youngest of them is 19. So. No, I think I'm the exception, shall we say. I'm the one that danced and the others didn't.
Yeah. So. Well, to be fair, you did enough for everyone.
Hey, yes. I like to think, as I said earlier, I'm a good ambassador for Scottish Country Dancing, and the Society for that matter too. And I'd like to think that I've tried to put things back as a thank you for all the fun that I've had and all the wonderful friends I've made all over the world. And I do enjoy it. But sadly, the Anno Domini is proving too big a challenge. So, and I'm not dancing as I would like to. And I've determined I'm not going to become a shuffler, as I've seen some do. And it's sad to see when somebody comes along to Somerset. There was one lady in particular who insisted on coming along, and she was well past it. And she wasn't dancing, she was shuffling. And I felt very sorry. She's devised one of the dances, which this is a society dance, so I won't mention her name. But she was, in her day, a very fine dancer. But then age caught up and she didn't dance, but she carried on. But it was sad to see, because she could not get off the floor at all. She shuffled. And everybody really felt sorry for her. And I'm determined not to do that. When I get to that stage, I shall stop dancing. I certainly don't intend dragging any class down. So, but they're not there yet.
Well, exactly.
But it's coming close.
Oh, you never know.
Yes. Well, that's about it, I think, unless you've got any other questions.
No, that's perfect. That was great. Thanks a million, Tom. I'll get that written up and I'll send it to you, and you can, you know, if you do want to change anything or add anything or take anything out, you can just me know. And
well, I've got a mind full of cotton wool at the moment, so you never know, I might think of something else.
Oh, that's always the way, though. You always think of things you could have said after. But
yeah.
No,
indeed.
That was perfect. Thanks so much for making the time to come in, and I'm really sorry.
Oh, my pleasure, indeed.
I wasn't
more
prepared.
Anything I can do to help the society, it's a pleasure for me to do so. As I said, so I look down for posterity in the archives.
Well, we really appreciate that as well. This is really nice. And yeah, it's so good because, you know, we are really trying to be the archive and library that has everything SCD related. So
indeed. Uh-huh. Yes, well, I thought
it's really good to have
something that should be in the archives.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right, okay, Nora. Well,
thanks very much for
sharing. Thank you for the opportunity. Yes. So now I should be taking my sister out to dinner tonight.
Good. What day are you going down?